Good evening and welcome to the Michael Slate Show. My name is Sansara Taylor and we have got a fabulous show for you this evening. We are going to start right off really strong with a portion of the interview that I had the great privilege and honor to conduct with Bob Avakian, the revolutionary leader, the architect of the new communism, somebody who has been fighting for revolution for over 50 years of his life, never slowing down, never giving up, never giving in. And not only that, digging deeper, forging the science, forging the strategy, advancing the vision of what a truly emancipated society and world will look like and fighting to make it real. We're going to play the portion where Andy Z and I asked Bob Avakian what sustains him, and it will blow you away. It blew me away. After we play that, we'll bring you some of the conversation that Andy and I had about this interview. And then we will dive into two incredibly intense flashpoints in the battle for the future shaping up in this society right now. One of them will key off a fascist march on the LA City School Board, where a bunch of so-called parents' rights forces are demanding and fighting for attacks on LGBTQ people and the people who stood up against them, including members of the Revolution Club in Los Angeles and Lucha Bright, who was wrongfully arrested, brutally assaulted by the LAPD. I will bring you sound from a press conference that she held where she announces that she is filing suit against the LAPD and gets into that more deeply. And then we will go to Chicago, where the Chicago Revolution Club has a message for Jason Aldean, who put out his fascist rallying cry anthem for civil war. Try that in a small town. We'll hear about that song, a takedown of that song, and an announcement from the Revolution Club in Chicago. So with that by way of introduction, let's dive right in. This is Bob Avakian on What Sustains You.
You know, you've been doing this for a long time. You've been leading a revolution. You've been a leader before that. And I think people would want to know a bit more about, even as it's been contained in what you said, what sustains you? What makes you not only not give up, but continue to strive and develop the science and to struggle with the masses of people, to struggle with all of us who are following you and just stating a willingness to struggle with all these masses to get into the one way out for them? And then also maybe say something, even as you've just covered a lot of it, to those people who are in this movement and those people who don't even know about it yet but need to be in this movement of, Where are they going to get that inspiration, that courage, that conviction, that sustenance to really put it all on the line, as you just said, to really live and if necessary, make whatever sacrifice is required to bring about a world where humanity could really flourish?
Well, I mean, as the first part, the most fundamental thing in terms of anyone being sustained is having a scientific approach to reality, being grounded in that and consistently applying a scientific method and approach to understand the contradictions that you're up against, to understand the deeper driving forces of things, to understand that everything we've been talking about, all the horrors, are rooted in this system, and that there is a way to eliminate all this by uprooting and overthrowing this system and replacing it with something much better. So, and most, you know, the most important thing and the most basic thing is having that scientific method and approach, but that, you know, it's not something you get once. You have to keep on struggling to apply it in a living way to a constantly changing reality and to deepening your understanding of that scientific method, including learning from your mistakes, the things you did wrong, but also learning from what, you know, the things you did right and what results that produced and then building on that. So that's the most fundamental thing. As far as, you know, more personal thing, I think it's the same as everybody else who's part of this. You know, you come to see that this world is, first of all, intolerable, and second of all, that it's unnecessary. And once you see those two things, then you can't, you know, not apply yourself to actually bringing about the change that's needed, the fundamental revolutionary change that's needed. It's just, you know, it's you again, the science keeps you grounded, keeps you going through all the difficulties and contradictions. But there's a basic stand that what the, you know, people in the world are being put through is completely intolerable and completely unnecessary. I mean, I could talk about some of my own personal development in this, but, you know, as I've said before, you know, I consider myself extremely fortunate. I grew up in a city which, on the one hand, was, you know, intellectual center. You know, I grew up in a middle-class family. I lived in the Berkeley Hills, where all the better-off people live, you know. And I, because of that, I was able to be exposed to a lot of, you know, knowledge, but not just knowledge. A lot of, you know, a lot of intellectual curiosity was encouraged. And I was able to, you know, have a lot of resources to read books and, you know, I used to go to, you know, Shakespeare plays, and I went to plays by Leroy Jones too, and he was called Leroy Jones, you know. But I was very encouraged and was interested in a broad array of cultural and intellectual things. That, and I had the situation where I could do that because of how I grew up. But then, you know, my life changed dramatically. I mean, for one thing, I'll give my parents credit, partly because my mom was religious, very religious. My dad was religious. My mom was very religious. They sent me to YMCA camp from the time I was 9 years old. And the one thing I was, you know, really good about that, or the one thing that really stands out, is that the YMCA in Berkeley, which is one sponsoring the camp, was integrated. You go to the Y was integrated. You go to the camp that I went to for 5 years, it was integrated. And not just were there, you know, for example, black people at the camp, but they were the cabins that you slept in, the group you were part of, was integrated. So, you know, I still remember, I won't say his full name, I remember one dude, Wesley, was in a cabin with me and his cousin, for the years I went there. And, you know, to be honest, when I was a kid, I was kind of spoiled too, you know, coming up, and they didn't like me that much, you know. I had some interactions with them that made an impression on me, you know. Like one time I got really homesick at camp, and I knew that some of these kids didn't like me very much, and I think I was 9 or 10, I went and I threw myself down in my bunk in the cabin, and either Wesley or his cousin came in and started comforting me and saying, you know, you're not that bad, you know, you shouldn't feel that bad, people don't hate you that much, you know. and it made me feel better. You know, and it made a deep impression on me, and so did the whole thing of going to camp. But, you know, and then I went to middle school, or junior high school, as it was called, and, you know, there were very few black people there, but in ninth grade, my best friend, John, was black, and, you know, we got pretty close. We did some singing stuff together and had a lot of fun together, and that had an impression on me. And then I considered, like, one of the great things about Berkeley was that it only has one public high school. And so when you go to that public high school, you know, you're thrown together with everybody. Like, there were three junior highs when I went there. They're not there now in the same way. But it was Garfield, where I went to, which was overwhelmingly white, some Latinos, and about 25 black people. Then there was Willard and Burbank, where most of the Latinos and, you know, large numbers of black people went, especially Burbank, which was in Southwest Berkeley. And we all came together. You know, at that time, the high school was like three years, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade. We all came together. And I still remember my first day of high school. They had an orientation. And, you know, if you came from Garfield, there was all this racist shit. And like, oh, man, you're going to go down to Berkeley High, and there's going to be all these black kids there from Burbank and Willard, and you're going to get your ass kicked and all this kind of stuff. And so, they had an assembly the first day for all the new students. And so I got there late. And I was looking for a seat, and I couldn't find, I mentioned this in my memoir, but, you know, I was looking for a seat, and I couldn't find a seat. And I'm walking all around looking for a seat, and then I went by this one guy who was kind of slouched against the wall like this, and his feet were sticking out. And I said, I don't want to get into any shit here. So I walked very gingerly around him. And as I did, he turned to me and said, "Hey, man, you stepped on my dogs." I didn't step on his feet at all, just to be clear. I said, "No, I didn't." He said, "Yes, you did, man. You stepped on my dogs." And then that was all there was to it. Now, this dude, whose name was Odell, he and I became friends later on. We were in a singing group together when I was a senior in high school. You know, I used to see him out in the hallway, you know, because he didn't go to class all that much. But, you know, he was creative. So I'd see him out in the hallway when I'm going to class, you know, and I'd say, hey, Odell, what are you doing, man? How come you're not in class? He'd say, I'm writing songs. So, you know, then he'd be writing songs for our group, you know. I remember he had one that was called Chuck Is Good For You. It was all about, you know, eating good food was good for you. But so, you know, that was Odell, you know, and you go through changes. At first it's like, you stepped on my dogs. And then we're in a singing group together and they're telling me, hey, man, step back here a little bit. We don't want your white ass sticking out too much when we're doing our routines. So this is all part of the, you know, the really great experience you have. You know, I had many experiences like this. I made a lot of friends. I didn't make friends to make a point. I made friends because I liked people. You know, some of them were white. Some of them were Japanese. Some of them were Latino. A number of them were black. But they were people I liked. I got to know them in sports. I got to know them in singing class and this kind of thing. They became my friends. You know what? Friends are people in your heart, okay? Mm-hmm. I don't mean something superficial. You know, oh, I got a bunch of black friends. I mean, these are people that are in your heart, okay? These are people that, you know, you go to their house and they come to your house and you talk all kinds of shit with each other about what's going on, you know, and you talk on the phone back in those days. And I don't know what the fuck we talked about, but we talk about it for hours. You know, so these are people in your heart. And then you see what people are being put through. Just, you know, the daily shit and the bigger shit. And, you know, my mom always taught me, you know, as a good Christian, that you should care about other people. That's the kind of Christianity she was about. You should care about other people. So, I cared about my friends, not just because my mom told me to, although that had an influence on me, but I cared about my friends because they were here. These are my friends, and you're doing all this shit. Plus, I loved the culture they were part of. I loved being in a singing group. I mean, I could get into old stories about that. You know, it was a lot of fun. You know, I can remember, I guess I am going to tell a story. I remember one time we went to Live Oak Park, which is the main park in, one of the main parks in Berkeley, and I could tell more stories about that, but we don't have time for that. And we were going to do, our group was going to do a, you know, sing for a dance there. And we're walking, you know, past the basketball courts, getting ready to go into the auditorium to do the singing. And a friend, and our lead singer was my friend Sam. And a friend of his was playing basketball, and he's coming over to get a drink of water. And he says, Sam, what the f*** are you doing here? He said, well, I'm here to sing with my group. You can't sing, Sam. Yeah, I can, man. So then they had to do a spaniel song. They had to have a sing-off. Guy challenged Sam to sing. So they did a verse and a half, and the other guy gave up because Sam could really sing. So, you know, this was all, you know, this, I love this. This was all part of, like, you know, something that, you know, just, you know, made my life rich. And then you're going to tell me that you're going to do this and that to my friends. And then you're going to do this and that to all these other people that are just like my friends. I mean, Sam took me out to his house. We went out to East Oakland. He lived right at the edge of East Oakland, right by 98th Avenue, I think it is. And in those days, San Leandro was right next to East Oakland, and you didn't go in San Leandro if you were black back in those days. And there was a creek and a fence right by where Sam lived, and that was the dividing line. You know, you didn't go into San Leandro. Here, my friend Sam, he couldn't go into San Leandro. It was right across the creek because he'd get jumped on. So I'm saying, what kind of f***ing world is this? So that was a big thing to me, you know. And then, you know, the civil rights movement was jumping off. And then, you know, more militant and revolutionary forces like the Black Panther Party came forward. And I was in college at that time. You know, I had recovered from a serious illness, and I had an ambition. I wanted to learn a whole bunch of languages. I wanted to be a Renaissance man, you know, be able to speak at least five or six languages and read literature in all these different languages, you know. And I was taking all kinds of literature courses, and I had a favorite professor who was Italian, you know, and all this kind of stuff. I was enjoying my time, but I also was still thinking about all these big things going on. And then the Black Panther Party came along. You know, and I was devastated by the death of Malcolm X, like a lot of people were, millions and millions of people, and more than that around the world. And the Black Panther Party came along, and, you know, well, I could go back, you know, just since you asked me this question, I'm going to get into it. you know, so I had, I mentioned my friend Billy, you know, so about when I was still in college, but just, you know, maybe about 1965 or something, I was down at this rec center in Southwest Berkeley. It used to be called the Grove Rec Center, but it's not called Grove anymore. But I was down there, and my friend Billy was playing basketball. He was a great basketball player. And then, you know, after they finished up, he introduced me to this dude named Weasel, whose nickname was Weasel. And they'd played against each other in high school. You know, Weasel went to McClyman's High School in West Oakland, and Billy went to Berkeley High, and they played a great game. But unfortunately, McClyman's won, and our high school that Billy played for lost by 1 point in overtime. And it was a bitter thing, but they were friends, Billy and Weasel. So Billy and I talked a while, and then he introduced me to Weasel, and Weasel and I started talking. And, you know, Weasel was interested, as I was, in all this going on. So, you know, we kept on talking, and then he asked me to give him a ride home. So I gave him a ride home. We went over to his house, and we stayed up till 2 o'clock in the morning drinking coffee and talking with his mom, as well as him, of course. You know, the three of us talking about what was going on with black people in America and all the shit this imperialist ruling class was doing in Vietnam and the Congo and all this kind of stuff. I still remember that very vividly, this staying up till 2 in the morning. And then I hung out with Weasel for a while. And then one day he said to me, you know, there's just going to be this cultural program going on at the community college in Oakland. I think it's called Merit now. And so I, you know, he said, why don't you come on down there? It's an Afro-American cultural program. So I went down there, and, you know, I was, I think, one of two white people in the audience, but that was fine. And Bobby Seale turned out to be the MC. And he was hilarious. I mean, he could do great impressions of all kinds of people. He did an impression of Bill Cosby back in the day. He was down on Bill Cosby for doing I Spy, being a CIA agent, and he was mocking Bill Cosby, imitated John Kennedy, all this kind of shit. And I thought, you know, he was great, you know, as an MC of this program. And so then the program ended, and I'm starting to leave, and this guy comes up to me, and he says, who are you, Socrates? And I said, no. And then it turned out it was Huey Newton. And then we started having a discussion about what's going on with black people, black liberation, revolution. And he said to me, you know, are you part of the CP? Because he's trying to figure out why I was there. First, he wanted to know if I was Socrates. Then he wanted to know if I was in the CP. Are you in the Communist Party? And I said, no. He said, that's good. They're not revolutionary. Are you in Progressive Labor Party? I said, no. He said, that's good. They pretend to be revolutionary, but they're not revolutionary either. And then we got into a discussion, and he was running down about how revolution could succeed, especially for black people in America, because although they might be a minority in America, the at least two-thirds, maybe three-fourths of the world was with them. So it's possible they could make revolution here. And that was, you know, somewhat naive. It wasn't a fully developed scientific approach. But it made an impression on me, and this whole discussion made an impression on me. And then I was working at Ramparts magazine, and Eldridge Cleaver got out of prison on the basis of getting a job at Ramparts. So we were talking all the time, and I used to go over to his house, and as I mentioned, I talked to him on the phone sometime. And, you know, and this just got me, you know, much deeper into understanding that we needed a revolution. And I just bring it to a close by saying none of the things that I've mentioned that propelled me in this direction have gotten better. It's not that, you know, yeah, there's more black middle class, there's more women able to do this and that, but these terrible forms of oppression, not just to people, you know, the whole Vietnam War thing, mm-hmm. all the atrocities that you learned about, I took that war very seriously. I took time to make up my mind. When I was in the free speech movement, we had a sit-in in the administration building for a couple of days and finally won our demands. But all the leaders of it, or almost all of them, were against the Vietnam War. And I remember Mario Savio, the main leader, got up and talked about what the administration was doing against us was the same type of thing that the government of our government was doing in Vietnam. And I kind of didn't like that because I wasn't sure, you know, how I felt about Vietnam. But I was studying. I was going into the library and I was reading up on all the different, you know, things that were being analyses about Vietnam, and I was reading about the commission that was set up to oversee the, you know, the situation in Vietnam, International Commission, and they were reporting that it was the U.S. side that was violating all the agreements. You know, these kind of things are going around in my mind. you know, and I'm thinking and studying and everything. And then, as I've said a number of times, I woke up in you know, the spring of 1965, got the newspaper, and here's this great big article about Selma, Alabama, and the Pettus Bridge and the attack on the civil rights marchers, and that was it for me. I said, you know, how in the f- can these people, this government that claims it's bringing freedom to the people of Vietnam and getting rid of these terrible communist tyrants, how in the f- can they be bringing freedom to the people in Vietnam? Why would they even be trying to do that when look what they're doing in this country and look what the government is allowing to go on right here? And that was it for me. So, you know, all these things came together, but none of this has gotten better. You know, if anything, it's gotten worse. The environment, the whole thing of the environment was just starting, the environmental danger and crisis was just beginning to be recognized at that time. Some people saw the, where things were headed. But it's gotten obviously worse over decades, and it's accelerating all the time. And, you know, the danger of nuclear war, all these things have not gotten better. And, you know, the people that I care about, that I've learned about, not just the people I grew up with, but the people around the world that I've learned to care about, when I've learned about their situation, to me, for me to give up would be betraying all those people. It'd be like turning your back on your best friends. So it's fundamentally the science that's the foundation, and that, you know, you need to keep deepening and applying and grasping and learning, or else you will go off course. But that's, there's also a thing that I think everybody who gets into this revolution becomes, you know, feels, that right here you feel like what people are being put through, you just can't go along with it. You just can't stand by and watch it happen. You can't live with yourself if you don't do everything you can, especially when you know it's unnecessary and a better world actually is possible. You can't give up. Yes, you can get discouraged. You know, when there's a, when there's defeats, when there's setbacks, big ones, you know, gigantic ones, like when China went off the socialist road, was taken off the socialist road, and the revolution was betrayed there, and capitalism was restored, and it's emerged as an imperialist power instead of a revolutionary stronghold for the people of the world. Those things are discouraging, but you bear down with the science, and you keep in your heart why you got into this in the first place, and what it is you're in this for. And that's why I don't give up. So that's what I would say about that.
So Andy, I just have to begin by reacting to what we just heard. I mean, B.A. really bears his soul. He really bears his heart in this culmination of this three-part interview that we did with him. And you get a sense both of the incredible heart for humanity that's driving him, and the science, the heart and the head really comes through in this. And you see MBA really the same person who, as a young person, just couldn't accept a world where his friend Sam, because he's Black, couldn't go across the river into San Leandro. And over the years, BA has been working for years and years. He's put in the work for decades, fighting for a revolution, fighting to change this, to break down all that's concentrated in that border that Sam couldn't cross, and all the other borders, all the other divisions that BA has come to learn about across the world. And the only thing that has changed is the scope of his concern and the depth of the science that he has forged. He's the same person, and it's really just an incredible, it's an incredible introduction to him. It's an incredible invitation into the fight that he's dedicated his life to.
Yeah, you know, when I asked him what sustains you, I had no expectation of the breadth and the depth of that answer. And it was just like, I felt like, you know, somebody said, well, let's just get on this roller coaster. It's really quick. And then there, you just went on this train, and it was like, it's really incredible. And you know, what you said about the stories, it has led me to reflect quite a bit on this. You know, when he said at the end, you feel like what people are being put through, you just can't go along with it. You just can't stand by and watch it happen. You can't live with yourself if you don't do everything you can. I mean, just stop there. You know, I mean, this is something that humanity needs. It's time of such selfishness that permeates the society, and yet the stakes are so high in terms of the threat of floods, burning, fire, all this stuff that's happening to humanity. To have somebody who has dedicated their lives to solving the problem that they can't live with themselves if they don't do that. And then he goes on to say, when you know it's unnecessary and a better world is actually possible, that's the work he's actually done. That's the work he's actually done, and that's what people get through all of the interviews. So I share with you being tremendously moved by this.
Yeah, we wanted to take a few minutes following this excerpt that we played with you, played for you, to talk about the importance of spreading these interviews and really making BA known throughout society and making these interviews seen by tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people. And just think about what you just experienced. Think about how it made you feel. Think about what it challenged in you. And think about the impact of millions seeing this. This has got to be our mission, all of us. Even if you're just learning about this for the first time, and especially if you've been familiar with this, you've seen this before, you've been part of this movement, all of us need to go and fight to spread this right now and get BA and get these interviews seen, engaged, debated, a pole of attraction, of controversy in society. And this needs to happen now. It needs to happen in an urgent way because we are living, as we've been emphasizing on this show, and as BA goes into deeply in these interviews, we're living in a time where the future is really hanging in the balance and the future is being shaped. And we are living in one of those rare times where decades, the kinds of change that usually takes decades to come about is happening in months and increasingly in weeks. And this is going to become even more intense. And so these interviews need to be shaping how millions are processing what they're living through. They need to be shaping what they're doing with their lives. They need to know that we have this leader who is like no one else who's ever existed in this country or in the world today.
So, Sansara, just how you put it, that, you know, that the future really is hanging in the balance, the existential crisis that humanity faces, and the time that we live in right now when the possibility exists for actually making a revolution. You know, people go to those stories that we've been talking about, and you travel with BA, and he's telling you how he changed, how these experiences he had changed him, and you're there for the ride, but you feel that, like, how things are could be really different. The whole permanence of just all the crappy relations people have and all the that comes at people from the system, all of that could just melt away while you're watching. And so I want to just say to people watching this who felt this, that the existential question for humanity is also an existential question for you. What are you going to do with your life? Here we are. The future's hanging in the balance, as I've said three times. You need to act on that. And a place to start is with getting these interviews out. If these interviews, if this section of these interviews spoke to you, you need to get it out there because there's thousands and thousands of people who feel like you do too, but they don't know about this. So that's what we're struggling with you, telling you to. And what could really to do, and it could really make a tremendous difference. I'll say this, there'll be no revolutionary change, no other way we could be living if there aren't thousands and millions of people getting into these interviews, getting into Bob Avakian, and that's going to be a doorway into the revolution and to changing the world.
And as you take these out, you're going to encounter people who are really moved by what they hear from BA, who really love this person, what it opens them up to. Yes, who are challenged, who have differences, questions, all of that, but who respond well. And we need to gather all of those people and involve them in spreading this and organize them to be a force making this known. At the same time, if you take this out, you're going to run into people who hate what BA is saying and even hate him, run a lot of bullshit, snarky shit, blah, blah, blah. He's a cult leader. He's an old white man. I don't need to listen to him. And fundamentally, the most important thing to understand is that the love for BA and the hate that comes at BA, all of it is for the same fundamental reason. Because what he concentrates, what he is fighting for, what he is struggling with all of us to take up and apply ourselves to is the most radical transformation in the world. It's a break with everything about how this world conditions people to think, relate to each other. It's the most radical revolution and emancipatory project. And some people want that, and some people are terrified of it. And when they tear down BA, that's what they're tearing down. And we need to build up the love as we take this out. So not only do you need to spread this, you need to have the courage and the honesty and the integrity to recognize what you just saw and the integrity and principle that BA has and answer the bullshit when it comes and don't bow down to it and organize and mobilize others who are getting turned on by this and work with us here on this show to spread these.
So with that, I want to leave you with the last couple minutes of the last question of the three interviews we did and let that sink in and then do exactly what Sansara just said.
And, the people that I care about, that I've learned about, not just the people I grew up with, but the people around the world that I've learned to care about when I've learned about their situation. To me, for me to give up would be betraying all those people. It'd be like turning your back on your best friends. So it's fundamentally the science that's the foundation, and that you need to keep deepening and applying and grasping and learning, or else you will go off course. But there's also a thing that I think everybody who gets into this revolution becomes, feels. And right here, you feel like what people are being put through, you just can't go along with it. You just can't stand by and watch it happen. You can't live with yourself if you don't do everything you can, especially when you know it's unnecessary and a better world actually is possible. You can't give up. Yes, you can get discouraged. When there's defeats, when there's setbacks, big ones, gigantic ones, like when China went off the socialist road, was taken off the socialist road, and the revolution was betrayed there, and capitalism was restored, and it's emerged as an imperialist power instead of a revolutionary stronghold for the people of the world. Those things are discouraging, but you bear down with the science, and you keep in your heart why you got into this in the first place, and what it is you're in this for. And that's why I don't give up. So that's what I would say about that.
All right, that was Bob Avakian, the revolutionary leader, speaking on what sustains you as part of the Bob Avakian Interviews on the Revolution, Nothing Less show. The full interview available at youtube.com/therevcoms. Then following that interview, you heard Andy Z and I, the host and co-host of the Revolution Nothing Less show, talking and reflecting a little bit on that interview. You are listening to The Michael Slate Show. We're going to take a short musical break and be right back.
Trying to look past this thing that's between us, wondering when all this anger will fade. The stars look the same from where we are standing. Why can't we fix this mess we've made? Let's not forget that our fates are as one, just because we feel numb and betrayed. There is love, there must be something good, something strong between you and me. There is hope, we must try. If we don't, we'll regret it the rest of our lives, side by side. Forever, you and me, we are stronger together. Hoping to find a path to forgiveness,
knowing that pride always gets in the way. We all want a place where it's safe to be human, the welcome embrace of a brand new day. Let's not allow what we have to be lost just because of what someone might say. There is love, there must be something good, something strong between you and me. There is hope, we must try. If we don't, we'll regret it the rest of our lives, side by side, forever. You and me, we are stronger together. Something good, something strong between you and me. There is hope, we must try. If we don't, we'll regret it the rest of our lives, side by side, forever. You and me, we are stronger together. There is love, there must be.
And let's move now to the streets of Los Angeles. We will hear from Lucha Bright of the Los Angeles Revolution Club speaking out against a fascist assault on the school board here in Los Angeles, where I'm broadcasting from, where Lucha and others were defending LGBTQ students and rights. Let's go to that now.
Activists are calling for an LAPD officer to be fired for allegedly brutalizing a protester outside LAUSD headquarters. The alleged incident happened during dueling demonstrations last Tuesday when parental rights groups squared off against a group of LGBTQ supporters over a potential transgender notification policy. The group Revolution Club LA says Lucha Bright was also unjustly arrested. Bright says she is suing the LAPD. The group is demanding the charges against her and two others who were arrested be dropped.
Totally unhinged violence. There was absolutely nothing that precipitated it on our part. There was no reason for it. It was just gratuitous violence against us.
We have reached out to the LAPD, but the department says it does not comment on pending litigation.
My name is Lucha Bright. Last week, I was brutalized and arrested by the LAPD, just blocks from here. Today, I am demanding firing the officer whose badge number is 20068, who stabbed his nightstick into my chest and repeatedly hit me with it. I am demanding that the charges against me be dropped and against another person who was charged that day. And I will be filing a lawsuit against the LAPD for violating my civil rights. On August 22nd, the LAPD violently attacked those of us who were standing up for the LGBTQ community. We were standing against 150 MAGA Christian fundamentalist so-called parental rights protesters who tried to march on the LAUSD school board meeting in session. Parents' rights? They want to strip LGBTQ people of their humanity. They want the right to force their dark ages, biblical patriarchy, and lunatic QAnon insanity on children and on everyone. They're targeting school boards from Glendale to Chino to Temecula, and they terrorized Sataquay Elementary School last June for reading a book to children that says it's okay to have two mommies. This is the kind of fascist momentum that leads to things like the murder of Lori Carlton in Lake Arrowhead, just days before this march, killed for refusing to take down the LGBTQ flag in front of her store. The LAPD used violence against those of us protecting LGBTQ rights. Their violence against us is totally illegitimate and should not be accepted by anyone. That is why I will be suing them. That is why the officer who can be seen in video going off with completely unhinged violence, the one in these images right here, needs to be fired now. Many more people need to step up to defend the rights and lives of people who are under attack by racist, women-hating, anti-LGBTQ thugs in and out of government. We in the Revolution Club are leading and organizing people to do that. As part of working for a real revolution and a whole new emancipating way to live. The points of attention for the revolution, the basis on which we're uniting people to build up these defense forces, say, we fight for a world where all the chains are broken. Women, men, and differently gendered people are equals and comrades. If you agree with that, join us.
A whole new way to live and a fundamentally different system outlined. A new society where instead of violating people's rights, instead of sicking police out in the streets on people who are standing up for a better future, the institutions of the revolutionary society would back people up to end all discrimination, to protect the rights of people to live and not just not be demonized, but to live in a world community of human beings. And we are fighting today to make a revolution to get to that society. And we are working to organize people through this, in the face of this attack, to wake up and look that it is not going to come from voting for Democrats. Here in LA, we have them, and they're still doing this. In the White House, you got them, and they're braying about, Biden brays about funding the police, and Bass complies by funding the police who carry out the violation of the rights of people who are standing up to protect people. No, it's got to be the people who are heartsick, the people who want a better future, getting with the RevComs now to fight the power and transform people for revolution. To get the message of revolution on the map by getting it on the wall so people know there is reason to hope. There is a future worth fighting for if you've got the heart to fight for it. And there is a force to get with in order to do that. So join with us in raising the demand to fire Officer 20068. Drop the charges against Lucha Bright and the other protester arrested with her. And to join in the demand to file suit against the LAPD for violating people's rights last Tuesday.
The revolutionary leader and author of The New Communism, Bob Avakian, has said, instead of fighting and killing each other, what people need to be doing now is uniting to defend each other. Opposing all unjust violence, not launching attacks on anyone, but at the same time, not allowing the police or civilian fascist thugs to wantonly brutalize and murder people. And people need to do this as part of building up the forces for revolution. That's my statement. Thank you.
All right, that was sound from Lucha Bright and others with the Revolution Club from the streets of Los Angeles, standing up against the fascist assault on the school boards here and on the rights of LGBTQ students and people generally.
You are listening to The Michael Slate Show. We're going to take a short musical break and be right back.
Let's turn now to Jason Aldean, the racist, fascist country singer with his number one hit, Try That in a Small Town, which is really essentially an anthem for civil war in this country, one that decent people need to wake up to and get organized to counter on the basis of revolution. We are going to hear Rafael Cadaris break down what's wrong with this song and then go to the Chicago Revolution Club talking about their intentions to stand up and make a statement against this when Jason Aldean comes to their town.
Fascist country singer and wannabe thug Jason Aldean just released a new song, which has already gotten tens of millions of views, called Try That in a Small Town. This is a straight up white supremacist lynching song. And it's a rallying cry for civil war. A lot of people have condemned it for being racist, which it is. But if you don't get the fascist political violence at the heart of it, you don't get where this is going. Let's watch.
Sucker punch somebody on the sidewalk. Carjacking old lady at a red light. Pull a gun on the owner of a liquor store. You think it's cool, act a fool if you like. Cuss out a cop, spit in his face. Stomp on the flag and light it up. Yeah, you think it's tough. Well, try that in a small town. See how far you make it down the road.
See how far you make it down the road? Think about it. Jason Aldean is saying that people who protest against police brutality or burn the flag in opposition to this country's crimes should get beaten down or even killed. And he's unleashing his millions of followers to do just that. These people can't wait to just wipe out everyone they hate. Black people, immigrants, people who don't conform to the patriarchal gender roles, and anyone who stands up against this system. No, he didn't specifically mention race. But who do you think his racist audience is thinking of and afraid of when he talks about crime? And when he says,
around here we take care of our own. You cross that line, it won't take long for you to find out. I recommend you don't.
Who do you think our own is? Do you think he's talking about the Muslim family next door? Or how about Jose and Maria working at the meatpacking plant? The trans kid in the small town high school, or the 16-year-old girl who needs an abortion. No, as he put it, it's all about the good old boys raised up right. Well, who are the good old boys in this country? In case the message wasn't clear enough, he shot the video in front of the Maury County Courthouse in Columbia, Tennessee, the exact place where 18-year-old black youth Henry Choate was lynched in 1927 by a mob of hundreds of white people who attacked him with a sledgehammer, dragged his body through the streets, and then hung him from the second floor of the courthouse. In this very small town in Columbia, Tennessee, at least 20 black men and boys were lynched or disappeared by white mobs and the KKK. Jason Aldean's good old boys. Now fast forward to the modern day lynching of George Floyd by a sadistic pig who kneeled on Floyd's neck for 9 minutes and 29 seconds, suffocating the life out of him while his fellow pigs looked on. Police murder after murder, beating after beating, video after video in small towns and big cities. And Jason Aldean wants people to just swallow this shit? Yeah, people were right to come out in these streets to express their anger. And yes, to cuss out these murdering cops. And yes, to stomp on that flag, which is nothing but a symbol of oppression, of slavery, genocide, and war from the beginning of this country down to today. And they were right to defend themselves and each other from these murdering cops and these fascist scum attacking them. As We Are the RevCom says, we need to be involving masses of people and rising up to resist the continuing crimes of this system and defending people from attacks on their rights and their lives by racist, woman-hating, and anti-LGBTQ thugs in and out of government. All as part of preparing for revolution. And by the way, Jason, you lying MAGA moron, you cherry-picked a bunch of images to show protesters as violent and scary. But the truth is, the vast majority of violence during the George Floyd uprising came from police and fascist vigilantes like Kyle Rittenhouse. But you just want more of that kind of violence. As for trying this in a small town,
we'll try that in a small town. You make it down the road.
Guess what, Jason? We did. Have you seen this map? And a lot of the protests in these towns were mostly white kids. That's right. Your disobedient sons and daughters? That must really terrify you, huh, Jason? Lastly, to all the decent people who aren't trying to hold on to the good old days when good old boys ran the town, Native people were erased, and Black people and women knew their place, you need to face what is happening in this country. This is not just another racist country song. It is an incitement to civil war, and tens of millions of people are loving it. Right now, the society is more divided than it's been since the first Civil War in the 1860s. And these MAGA mobs are armed and itching for a new one and a fascist takeover, with the 2024 election very likely to be a key turning point one way or another. There is no going back to normal, and you shouldn't want to anyway. Instead of choosing sides in a new civil war, what we need are masses of people prepared to defeat these fascists as part of getting rid of the whole capitalist imperialist system which spawned them. A system which has white supremacy and male domination built into it, and right now is pushing humanity toward climate catastrophe and World War III. We've seen the potential for revolution in the powerful and courageous uprising of millions of people of all races in 2020. No, that didn't lead to fundamental change, because you can't end racist police murder with more Black cops and mayors and reforms and silly demands like defund and abolish the police. To end police terror, you need to abolish the whole system these police enforce and replace it with a completely different socialist system. If you've been discouraged, hopeless, turning inward, sleepwalking while this nightmare accelerates, that's unacceptable. The oppression that made you come into the streets in the first place is still there and getting worse, and there is a real way to fight it. So it's time to wake up and get organized, not just for an uprising, but for an actual revolution. To all those in small towns and big cities who have the heart to fight for something really worth fighting for, it's time to join the RevComs. As Bob Avakian wrote recently, especially at a time like this, a time when big things are up in the world, affecting the whole future of humanity, when those big-time exploiters and oppressors who rule over us in this country are bitterly divided among themselves and increasingly unable to hold things together as a unified ruling class. When there is not just an urgent need, but a real possibility to seize on this situation to overthrow them altogether. If you are not getting with the RevComs, the revolutionary communists who are working every day for this revolution, if you are not part of working to bring about this revolution, then what the hell are you doing?
We are with the Revolution Club Chicago, and we're calling on you to step up and stand up. This MAGA moron Jason Aldean is coming to Tinley Park, Saturday, September 9th.
Try that in a small town.
This fascist Klansman's anthem, Try That in a Small Town, is not just another racist country song. It is a rallying cry for civil war.
These deranged a**s are serious about wiping out everyone they hate and deem as illegitimate. We are even more f***ing serious about making a revolution to eradicate the system that spawns all this madness.
We are the RevComs. And if you are sick and tired of all of the anti-LGBTQ white supremacist, woman-hating bullshit that is permeated throughout this atrocious society, join us Saturday, September 9th in Tinley Park, and have the heart to extinguish this poison and fight for humanity.
No more lynch mobs in and out of uniform. No more standing by while good old boys get ready for civil war.
We need and we demand a whole new way to live. We need to, and we are, getting organized for a real revolution.
All right, that was the Chicago Revolution Club. And before that was Rafael Cadera speaking on Jason Aldean and his racist country music number one hit, Try That in a Small Town. And that brings us to the end of this episode of the Michael Slate Show. I want to thank Henry Carson, our assistant producer. I want to thank you for tuning in and spending the hour or some portion of this hour with me. And I want to remind you that the problem is not human nature. It is the nature of the system. Through a real revolution, a better world is possible. I will talk to you next week.
Time heals everything, but I'm still waiting.